Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today we're joined by Mike Richards. Mike is the founder and CEO of The Treasury Recruitment Company. Established in 2002, The Treasury Recruitment Company is the only truly global treasury recruitment firm. They recruit at all levels, from corporate treasury to treasury analyst to treasury director for multinationals, consultancies, and a range of financial institutions. In addition, Mike hosts his own popular podcast, Treasury Career Corner, where he interviews treasury professionals about their careers. Their website's treasuryrecruitment.com. Mike, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, I just said before the show, Mark, this is quite weird. This is the only real podcast that I listen to, and I really listen to every week. So I do. I swim every week, and I've got you in my earbuds. And I was here. I said to you the other day, I had your Pinnacle one recently, and I'm like going. And then he said, "Do you want to be on my podcast?" I'm like, really? Me? Alongside those guys? Yeah, fine. Okay.
Absolutely. Mike, I've actually been following you for about 5 years, I think. And the reason...
No, we've... About the court order. Can you just stop it, please?
Honestly, the reason that I wanted you to come on the show is that you're doing such a fantastic job with digital marketing and everything from your podcast, the video content you're putting out there, the live events you're running. And you're doing a lot of the things that we teach our coaching clients in our program. So I'm looking forward to geeking out with you about marketing strategies and that kind of stuff. So this can be great.
Cool. Yeah. So just give you a quick précis for the, well, you've given a bit of an intro to us. So I've been a treasury recruiter for 25 plus years. Originally started with Robert Walters, joined a search firm, and then they said, look, Mike, we'd like you to do other areas like sales and other things. So I love treasury. For any listeners that are wondering, treasury, they're like, T what? Yeah, I'm like, okay. So there are three streams that report into a CFO. You've got your financial controller, today's money and backwards, tax, trying to save all your tax, pay less for it, and then treasurers. And they're the interesting guys. That's why I've become friends with them, and that's why I've done it for 20 years. They look after today's money and the future. So if you want to go buy another company, cash management, foreign exchange, basically all the interesting stuff about accountancy, if you like, and money. Because years ago they said, oh, we want you to do finance recruitment. I was like, really? Accountants? I was doing teaching recruitment at the time. And they said, it's twice as much money. I went, great, where's my desk?
Well, I'd like to just rewind a little bit even before that, Mike. How did you get into recruitment?
By accident, really. I did a teaching degree and I started to be you would call it a substitute teacher in Canada, in the US, a supply teacher. So I used to do supply teaching recruitment for a company that was called Capstone, got bought by Capita. And as they did that, that was, again, when someone said, look, you should do financial recruitment. I was like, okay. And they said, yeah, we do treasury. I said, what's treasury? So we don't know. Here's a big list of people. And I went, okay. And I started to meet these treasurers, and they usually were the first at the bar and often the last to leave it. I thought I found my people.
Hilarious. That's fantastic. So wait, you were a teacher and then you started recruiting teachers. That's how you kind of got into recruiting initially?
Yeah. So I've been a teacher before my degree, did my degree to professionalize myself so I could do that, and then fell into supply teaching. And then they said, oh, you'd be a recruiter here. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Did really well there. And then was at the top of the company, if you like, you know, couldn't get any more progression. And they said, a friend of my recruiter at the time, back in the day, goodness, said, you should do financial recruitment. And I got introduced at the time and I joined Robert Walters. So back in the 90s, a long time.
Yeah, no, that's hilarious. And so what is it? You said, you know, treasury is the more interesting part of accounting. And, you know, but that was a long time ago. That was 2002. So, like, can you tell a little bit of a story of your journey from 2002 to the present day? What have been like the highs and lows?
Wow, so many. Okay, we only got an hour, right? And again, just before, there's no offense to accountants, by the way. You do a brilliant job, guys. I just happen to find treasury much more interesting, okay? So there you go. So that's my disclaimer. 2002, desk, phone, office, started in an office in Waterloo. Moved a few offices, still around there in London, and grew the firm. So we started to do more expansion towards the Middle East and Far East at the time. In the early days, grew the team. We got as far at the time of about 10 staff. Then one of the global financial crisis hit us. Subprime came along as well. just as we were starting to expand into America. So literally, what was it, 2008, I booked into the big conference. We're on the plane. I went with the team. We walk into this conference hall, and it was tumbleweed. We're like, oh, my God. Right, what are we going to do? Okay. So we pulled back from expanding in America at the time. This is a pricey of it, but, yeah, and I just – we re-entered the U.S. market in 2012, so 11 years ago. And we reestablished ourselves there. So I focus a lot more of my time in the US. It's not new to us, if you like. So I studied at Northwestern, just outside on the outskirts of Chicago. Really enjoyed it out there. Just love Americans and Canadians as well. Sorry, I get that. And then my colleague, Cray, he focuses more on the UK. And then Katie, my colleague, she focuses Europe. So we've got a global offering, and we've also got researchers and team behind that as well. But our focus is, as you said at the beginning of the show, we do global treasury recruitment.
Fantastic.
Our niche is, it's an inch wide, a mile deep.
I love it.
So
excellent. So I know you've been through multiple economic cycles as I have, and you've been through those recessions as well as then the pandemic. What were some of the lessons you learned in terms of, like, and you're still here. I think that's what we can both celebrate that we've been through, because I started my company in 2001, so similar time frame to you, and we've had our ups and downs. And that's partly why I called the show The Resilient Recruiter, right, is because I think, and that's not about me, that's like our listeners, like recruiters have to be resilient and, you know, in terms of having that is a personal characteristic, but then we also need to build resilient businesses that are, you know, are able to survive and be sustainable in the long term. So what have you learned about building a resilient, you know, recruitment business through your 20 plus years in the business?
I think I've been asked a couple of times this, and different people in different businesses outside of recruitment, and they've said, oh, you've been going for this many years. And they said, what's your tip? You know, people say, what's an entrepreneurial tip? And I said to people, look after the cash. You know, you start to get the money coming in, you make a few placements, you're a recruiter thinking, oh, we can do some marketing, so do some conferences. And you guys had actually prompted me. We had an interview checklist, you guys said, and it, so it makes you reflect a little bit. And it's like, okay, so where would I have made mistakes? Where have I got it wrong? And that's by spending the money. You know, spend it. Yeah, great. Let's expand. Okay, let's do this. Let's go to America back in 08. You know, was that, we thought, yeah, America's going to take off. And we didn't really look at the economics. And it was like, yeah, it crashed and burned. And they were like, oh, goodness. You know, so basically, I think, you know, that's the first tip. Look after your money. The second one was, yeah, look after your money. You know, look at, yeah, after the, you know, the outgoings, and then make sure the incomings. You know, make sure you've got the guys billing. You know, make sure, you know, you're not like there with a big stick. Come on, guys, come on, come on. And then the third one was always look at one and two. You know, it's the lifeblood of your business. It's a bit boring. I'm sorry for the listeners out there, but I've heard it on a couple of your other, you know, podcasts where people have, and whenever they've done, I've gone, oh yeah, that rings a bell. Yeah, that's really
100%.
Good. I think that, you know, running in the business.
I wish that I'd figured that out sooner. It would have saved a lot of pain. And actually, we did a course for our clients towards the end of last year about recession-proofing your recruitment business. And that was one of the key chapters was, you know, cash reserves. And you can have, you know, a lot of companies go under, not because even profitable companies can go under if you run out of cash, right? And you can have a good business and, you know, and run out of cash and then it's game over. So what controls or rules have you put in place, Mike, so that when you're doing well, you don't, you know, you don't put the business at risk by overspending?
I think it's, we don't do it perfectly. I've got to say this, you know, put the hands up. We're doing a lot of expansion in the US at the moment, doing a load of events, and we're doing all this, but it's about making sure, and I can't remember, I think I've heard it on one of yours, where a lot of businesses go bust, but then the cash flow, they're owed huge amounts on the debtors. You know, we run our debtors really closely and things. You know, sometimes I look at it and we're, you know, it's quite an empty bank account. And then, but you actually look at your debtors and go, okay, we're owed six figures. Crumbs, where's this? And it's like, come on, guys, pay us, please. You know, the guy sitting at the desk, please pay us. And I think that's one of the key things. And again, what was it? Well, you pay yourself first, Michael McCallowicz and the different pots. And I can't say we do that properly yet.
We actually do that, Mike, actually. And so it's funny you mentioned that. So the two things, number one, you know, reducing debtor days, that is huge. I don't understand why more recruiting firm owners don't really pay attention to that. They just kind of accept, oh yeah, you know, it's technically 30 days, but we have people who, you know, 60, 90. I'm like, why? And it's because they're scared of, you know, if they chase the outstanding invoices too hard, that they might lose the customer. But to me, a customer that takes you 90 days to pay isn't a good customer anyway. So, you know, that I think that's one. So we'll talk about profit first in a second, but what's your settlement period, and then how do you make sure you get paid without, you know, ruffling too many feathers?
I think conversation is the first one, and having that relationship. The difference for us, again, we, you know, I'd had our pre-podcast call, and, you know, when I've worked for other firms where they've had a number of large clients, you know, so, you know, you might go to the banking desk and they say, oh, these are my top clients and might be some of the big names, you know, the Morgan Stanley, the Merrills, and oh, that we deal with these. And I said this to you, that we deal with 100, you know, they might have five big clients and we would have 105. So, you know, the treasurers that I'm recruiting for, or the CFOs, you have that conversation all the way through. It's not like you're distant to the business. A CFO will brief you on the treasurer position. You'll take the job brief. You then fill the brief. And as you're going through, you know, and we have a mixture of work. We're not just retained. My colleague Craig, he does a, you know, big mix in the UK. We're right the way through, sort of probably about a 50-50 mix at the moment. US is the same. Katie in Europe, they tend to do more of a contained search approach. And so that we want to recruit for you. And sometimes, you know, we do it contingent in Europe as well, when we know some of the countries that we've got a really good sort of a candidate flow, if you like. And we do a lot of work for, say, in Germany, we do a lot of work for Porsche, you know, in different countries in the Netherlands, and we cover right the way across, because Treasury is agnostic about where it is. So Treasury is global and everything else. But sorry, go on.
No, it was just, you've prompted a few follow-up questions, but let's just close out the one about cash. So, so you're tight with cash flow, making sure that, I don't mean tight in a, you know, pejorative sense. I mean, you're on top of it, right? You're paying attention to it. I think that's absolutely key. Building up those cash reserves, rather than as soon as you're like making a bunch more profit, then increase your overheads to match, right? Is the risk.
I think there's that, but I think there's also, you know, good example was my colleague was chasing up an invoice. The guy had started and was sitting there at the desk, and he was like sort of emailing to HR, and he was emailing to this, he was doing this. I went, right, have you phoned them? No. I said, well, just pick up the phone and ask for more information. He picked up the phone, and it turned out the lady wasn't replying because she was away on holiday, and for some reason or out of office wasn't set. And eventually we got to a stage. I said, look, just give me 5 minutes. I called the treasurer. Well, you can call him. Yes, I can, because I placed him, and actually we're friends. And, you know, I've got his personal mobile, and he apologized. He went, are you chasing me about the invoice? I went, yes. He said, oh. And it sorted overnight, because it's about it's a people business.
100%. We hide behind email. And, you know, I've had the exact same experience. Like, we're chasing someone, sending umpteen emails, they're not responding. And I just sent him a text. Can we talk? Sure. Called him right away. He was apologetic and embarrassed that it hadn't been paid, and like paid almost right away. So I know that sounds obvious, but it's, you know, it, sometimes the obvious gets overlooked. Do you have policies though to encourage prompt payments, such as, you know, the guarantee only applies if you've paid within the settlement period, or things like that?
We don't really. We got asked recently about a longer guarantee period for one of our candidates. And, you know, my colleague, Katie, was like, oh, are you okay with this? I was like, yeah. Oh, okay. I said, the fact is, do we expect this person to stay there for a year? And it was like, yeah, of course we do. I was like, okay, well then, happy to do that. You know, we might ask for something in return. They might say, oh, we want a full guarantee, money back guarantee. What, for a year? Really? You know, so, you know, we might say we want more of a sliding scale, but again, it's then engaging with the client. Why are they asking for this? It, you know, sometimes larger corporates, that's their standard policy. Well, just ask why and explore that, you know.
Fair enough.
Again, we're not that sort of thing.
So the reason I brought it up is one of my mentors is a guy called Romney Rawes, R-A-W-E-S, who's like, he's retired now, but he was a huge figure in the UK recruitment industry. So I learned a lot about, you know, cash flow, you know, settlement, you know, debtor days and guarantee periods from him. He was a board director at Reed PLC, and then he started up Select Appointments, and they got to like $3 million in profit within their first 4 years. And then he's been involved in lots of mergers and acquisitions and flotations, trade sales, stuff like that. So I learned a huge amount from him. And one of his things was getting debtor days down. And he would link it to the guarantee. So they had an excellent, like a industry leading guarantee, but it only applied if you'd actually paid on time. And they would use that as a lever, and they would remind the customer, they wouldn't wait till the invoice was past due. They would preempt that and say, like a week out, and say, just a gentle reminder that this invoice is payable in 7 days. And we're reminding you because we wouldn't want you to lose out on the extended guarantee period, right? And it was just, so he's getting ahead of it. He's not waiting till they're late. He's like, and then on the day he's following up, and then, you know, very, very tight on the follow-up, but it was linked to the guarantee. The other thing is if they did offer any kind of price concession, that also was conditional upon them paying on time. So if they, you know, let's say the fee is whatever, 30%, and the client wants 20% or whatever, and you agree to it, then it's only 20% if you actually pay us on time. And it was almost valuing the cash flow is almost as important as the size of the fee, right? Because, well, for the reasons we said earlier. Kudos to Romney Rawes. Profit First, great book. How much of that have you implemented?
Not enough.
Okay.
I think as recruiters, as I said, you know, earlier that you're always chasing yourself, you know, the development, and we're growing. And, you know, I was with a friend just yesterday. He said, oh, you know, how's it going? I said, well, it's not always a struggle. That's the wrong way. But it's you're wanting to expand. You're wanting to go to new territories. You know, I'm doing a lot more in the US next year. And actually, again, when we talked about it, as a business in the UK, we're a very mature business, you know, not just age-wise, but the fact is, you know, if you go to someone, oh, the Treasury Recruitment Company, we know you guys, yeah, we've used you or we've seen you at an event and everything else. In Europe, we've been to a number of events, we've interacted with lots of clients, they know us well over there, and that's good, but we're sort of a teenage business. In the US, despite having operated there for 10 years, we're still a child. You know, people are still going, the Treasury what? You just do treasurers, right? Oh, okay. I've spoken at the National Conference 3 times. A lot of Treasury folks know us, but so many don't because it's so vast. It's great fun. And we've got Joe Grabowski, my colleague over there, and he's leading the charge and doing really well. And he's been in Treasury, but he will pick up the phone and someone will still go, who are you? Even though they're connected to him on LinkedIn.
Awesome.
It's still a sort of, yeah.
So let's dive into that because I think marketing is more interesting to talk about than cash flow management, right? So you're in a situation with Treasury where, and I think there'll be a large proportion of our listeners who can relate to this. When you specialize in one function, there's a limited number of placements you can make at any particular company. And especially in a role like Treasury, there's not a huge turnover of these people, right? And so that's why you explained earlier, some of your colleagues who in other areas of finance could rely on maybe only having a handful of clients, like you can count them on one hand, and you had like 100 clients in your, you know, in your client base that you needed that spread of clients because your volume with one customer wasn't very much. which I think has forced you to get really good at marketing. So tell me, like, you do some really clever things in terms of marketing. So one of which I want to ask you about is your Global Treasury Salary Survey. How long have you been doing that, and how did that come about?
I started it when I started the company, I remember sitting in the office in Waterloo in 2003. Yeah, I know, before some of the listeners were born. Okay, let's move on. basically, I then gathered together, salaries from a lot of the guys in the UK. And I was thinking, one day we'll systematize this. One day. And there was always my dream. It was born out of frustration. I think you can probably work it out from my past history. One of my previous employers say, we do a salary survey. Great. I was like, this is great. Is it going to be in-depth research? No, tell me how much your most junior treasury analyst is on. Like, well, this person's on 30,000. Make it around 32,000. Okay. And how much the most senior one? 65. I was like, right. Okay, that's your range. I was like, no, those are just two people I know. That's no data. That's just a finger in the air. And so it got me very, I've got rid of the frustration now because our survey's so good. And so over time, we've developed it, and now it's systematized. So yeah, we track people's salaries through Tracker. And in actual fact, we've created it so that anyone goes to treasurysalary.com. I don't know if any treasurers will be listening to this podcast, but we love you too, and go to there. But then when you put the data in, it's live, it's real. And what we do is we keep on updating people's salaries. So within every 6 months, you know that the information is always kept up to date. It's a reason for us to call a candidate, reason for us to call a client. We noticed you took part in our salary survey. We noticed your information is 7 months out of date. We'll send you a link. Can you update yourself? And you'll continue to be part of the salary survey. We now run it every 6 months because we know that, it just constantly runs. And people say, well, hang on, because if you do it once a year, what's the point? If you do it every 6 months, it's a living, breathing document. And it's only ever 6 months out of date per se, because people's salaries, get reviewed maybe every 6 months. Yeah, maybe every year, but you've always got that snapshot as you go along. And we've got over 1,000 people do it now. It's hard work, but we've systematized that, a lot of it using the custom forms that Tracker gives you. And I've got to say that really has helped.
Amazing.
So we'll send out. Yeah.
I love this. And the fact that it's evolved so that it's like live, it's a live data set. It's not outdated. And you're constantly keeping it refreshed with a large pool of candidates who are submitting that information in real time. So that's awesome. And the fact that it links to your database as well is powerful. I don't know anyone else that's doing that. That's fantastic, Mike. We actually teach a course on how to set up and run a salary survey and market it. But I'm curious, how do you use it for marketing purposes?
Well, just before that, the thing I was going to say, and this is what people need to do, is that you give a confidential link to that person. You make sure it only goes to them. And when they click on that, because actually it's about taking away the points of friction, isn't it? It's like, oh God, do I have to do the survey again? Oh yeah. And it takes all of 2 minutes if you start to finish. But in actual fact, to retake part in it is less than 30 seconds. That's what we took away. I said, look, it needs to be less than 30 seconds. So it arrives on it. You click on the customized link. You open it. It shows you your previous data set. You go, oh, hang on. No, I have had a pay rise. Actually, that's changed my bonus. Click, click. Less than 30 seconds, they're back and they're live again. That was what makes it so special. I'm geeking out with this.
That's awesome. That I don't know anyone else doing that. That's really cool.
You guys can do it. And this is it is hard work. And we've done this. And we work with the guys at Tracker. And it works now. And then what we've done is automated the follow-up process as well. So, for instance, we're recording this beginning of February. We're actually going back to the January people that did it last year. In fact, not the January, sorry, the July, June people last year. And we're saying, you guys did the salary survey in June. You're now 6 months old, 7 months out of date. Just check your data and update it. We get that for a month. Over the next 2 or 3 weeks, get a couple of emails. If by the end of Feb, we say, look, we're either retiring you or we get on the phone. I say, Bob, you did your salary survey then. We'd love you to be part of it. Oh, yeah, God, I need to do that. Yeah, because otherwise we need to remove you. And actually, it's a and how are you doing? How's your job search? You're recruiting. Oh, it'd be great to chat. And also, you've got a reason to call them. And then this reason, exactly as you say there, you've got a piece of valuable data to give them. These salary surveys, we split it into the US, the UK, Europe. It then produces all sorts of other information, blogs, anything and everything. It's become, we sometimes talk about it on the podcast. We talk about it at conferences. You know, it can be a bit dry sometimes. You go, well, these salary survey for treasury analysts is this. But in fact, what you do is you can just compare between different territories. We've seen the US, you know, inflation busting rises for people over there. It's keeping pace with inflation in the UK, in Europe. Yeah, it depends on the countries. To be honest, there's a, you know, we see a drift more Eastern Europe, some of the treasurers moving out there. So, but again, it gives you, if I come back to it, you know, a practical example. In the UK, we recently had a client said, we'd like to recruit a treasury analyst. We'd like to pay them 45 or whatever it was. And we said, okay, so what, you want to pay below average then? What do you mean below average? The survey says we have 80 treasury analysts and the range is this, and you're already starting out by the starting salary you want to pay like 5,000 below the average or whatever it was. And they were like, oh, okay. Well, what makes you think this? Well, the other 80 treasury analysts we just surveyed in the UK. Oh, right. And the data makes you powerful. Again, it's sorry to geek out.
Yeah, no, that's huge. Like it does confer authority on you. So not only is it a marketing thing, but also it's real insight and market intelligence that you can bring to your clients that nobody else is offering that makes you the authority. So I love that. It does, you know, a lot of recruiters will say, you know, oh, your salary is below market, right? Below market rate. But the client isn't necessarily going to believe the recruiter because we stand to gain if they have a higher salary, right? But you're pointing to actual data and it's a lot more credible and they're just going to, I mean, how can you argue with that? That's fantastic.
It's just quite freeing as well as a recruiter because, you know, we were recently working with a client and they were like, well, where do you think the salary should be? And I said, well, I don't think this, I know this, and this is the data set. And they're like, oh, well, we were thinking of paying this. I was like, okay, we can, but you won't get anyone. It's like, it's easy. It's like, well, and actually then you also get to the stage of going, well, I'm afraid we can't help you. They're like, what? I said, why would we start out on a back foot? You know, we want, and we say to clients, no, we want these people come to you, kicking down the door, wanting to work with you. So you need to pay market rates. And this is the market rate for that opportunity.
Excellent. I love that. So you've got the salary survey, Global Treasury Salary Survey, which is up and running. And it sounds like you've really refined and mastered that over time. How long have you been going with your podcast and what inspired you to launch that?
Going for 5.5 years. Originally had the idea when podcasts were a brand new thing. You know, so when iPhones were developing, I thought about doing a podcast, funny enough, about recruitment. Luckily, I didn't because, you know, step out of your, you know, way. But I thought, crumbs, you know, if I did that, I would talk about maybe my experiences of it and I could see it maybe having a life of 5 or 10 episodes. And then I was like, yeah, I don't want to talk recruitment all day. I'd do that all day anyway. Why would I do that on a podcast? And so I was there with my, at the time, mentor, Chris Ducker from Upreneur, great guy.
Yep, I know
and
Chris.
We were talking about, yeah, he's great. And I was there in the mastermind and we were brainstorming ideas. And I'd already had this idea, but it sort of developed a little bit. I was going to talk to some treasury folks about some of this. And I was, hang on, I talk to treasurers each and every day about their lives. I interview them. That's what I do. Wonder if I could just record this. And so I did. We started it pre-COVID 5.5 years ago. I thought, well, we'd maybe try 10 episodes, see how we do. We're now at 310 episodes.
Wow. Good for you, Mike. I'm cheering for you here. That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. Like we've helped probably a dozen recruiting firm owners to launch podcasts over the last, you know, 12 months probably. But what I can see with a lot of podcast episodes, you can see that they launch and then they fizzle out, right? And yes. You've had... Is that consistency over time that really makes an impact and you start getting that exponential growth? So that's phenomenal. What do you think have been the keys to the success of your Treasury Career Corner podcast.
The guests. It's yes. their show. It's not mine.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like I've heard with the Resilient Recruiter. The reason I listen is because you're genuinely interested in your guests. You actually talk to them. You talk to other recruiters. And then you say, what have been your pain points? Not just, oh, what have been your successes? Yeah, but when were you crying in the corner? You know, when were you just like, what? You know, tell us about that now. You know, we don't do that, you know, the hard word on a lot of treasurers, because that would be quite bad. But basically, from day one, I tried to get out of their way. And we've got some really nice comments over time that, you know, I've got to say, I thought I was a good treasury recruiter before. You know, I was pretty good. I knew what I did. Now, 5 years later, I'm a really great treasury recruiter. Why? Because of my clients, because of the 310 stories I've shared so far. Someone actually asked me the other day, I can't believe you've done 300. Well, you've run out of people. I was like, no, there are thousands of
right.
people in the UK. Like, and we talk to a treasurer, we tend to end for the most senior person, but the first ever show I did with Sarah Jane from the Global Treasurer GlaxoSmithKline, but right the way across, you know, I've done Gary from Dow Chemicals. I've had global treasurers on the show, and they share their stories, you know, from when they first began. I've got the one of the upcoming shows, great guy, GW, the treasurer for Akzo Nobel, the chemicals company. I asked him just in our pre-podcast call, like we had the other day, I said, oh, tell me about your career and how have you planned it? Because you're now the global treasurer. He went, I've never planned my career, Mike. I mean, it's going to be a brilliant show. He went, no, I just went where things were enjoyable. If I enjoyed this, I'd keep on doing it. If I didn't enjoy this, I'd move away from it. And I'm like, he said, oh, your listeners probably don't want to hear this. I went, that's incredible. Just that you could become the global treasurer of a global, you know, multinational by just going where the stuff you enjoyed. I'm like, yeah, I can't wait to do it. We've got a schedule coming up. And I'm like, this is amazing. So
the podcast opens so many doors. It's truly a blessing, and it's incredible the goodwill it generates within your target audience and the access it gives you. I agree 100%. Getting quality people on the show is absolutely key. Like the quality of your guests is what's going to hook people. And then of course you have to just be really curious and ask loads of questions and let them, you know, let them share their knowledge and wisdom. So amazing. Now, could you talk a little bit about how the podcast has sort of spun off into so many other opportunities for you, Mike?
Well, yeah. And I actually heard on one of your recent shows, you had a guy that was talking about live training and how he did a podcast, and then it became a live training event. And they were doing lots of that in the sort of the tech industry and things. And I heard that and I was like, oh, wow. But we've already done that, but in a different way. So basically what happened originally pre-COVID, we did a panel session. I thought this could be quite good. And we were trying to record it for the podcast. The audio was terrible. The visual was terrible. Taught me lots of lessons. We couldn't reuse it. I was like, right, we're going to do this again. We're going to do it much better. We now host Treasury Career Corner Live. We did a couple of UK events. So the first one had 100 people say yes, 85 showed up. And it was like, wow, wow. No, that's not wow, wow. Last November, a wet night in November, we had 150 say yes. 128 still showed up on the night. 128 wow. treasurers.
That
I sat on a panel.
A really high, just to comment on that, because when the danger of making something free is that it's easier for people to go, nah, I don't feel like going tonight. So they just like, you know, they drop out. So typically in a free event, you're expecting about 50% of people to show up, right? And you're getting like 90% of people to show up. What? I don't want to take you off track, but I just wanted to comment on that. So continue with the story. What happened next?
Well, part of that, I thought you were actually going to go the way I was going to go is, you know, people said, well, why do they? Obviously, it's my romantic good looks. That's why they came along to see me. No. Was incredible guests.
Yeah.
So I had Dipali Chaw, treasurer of Moody's. I had Winnie Lee, treasurer of PPD Pharmaceuticals. I had Matt from Chubb Insurance. And they all came along and they were really giving as a panel. And we did it, you know, 6 for 6:30. They talked about their experiences for an hour. And then we did networking drinks and everyone stayed because everyone wanted to be back in face to face. Everyone had COVID, went through it, didn't see each other for a year and were locked in, you know, locked in their sheds and, you know, their home offices. The fact was there is a need for face to face. People want to see each other. And that's what's actually happening. There was so much interaction. And so we did that in London. That's, you know, then I was with a friend in his New York office having the worst coffee in the history of the world. I don't know why he couldn't make good coffee, but it was with creamer. It's really bad. I'm sitting there, Times Square, and I just said, do you know what? I should do it here. And I just meant do it in America. And he said, well, yeah, come along. I said, what? He showed me his law firm in Times Square. And he said, yeah, this is our conference room. You can do it here if you want. 65, 70 people in the room. We're doing that in March. I've got two events. So we're getting 65 treasurers in a room one night, 65 the next night, one night with the treasurer of NASDAQ, one with the treasurer of Louis Vuitton on another night with some other panelists, amazing guys, and talking about their treasury careers. And people want to be there. We only launched it a week and a half ago. We're already 60% full or sold out, booked or whatever. And then it's we're going to take it across the US and we're doing it across Europe. We're doing it in Athens. We're doing it right the way across. And people have sort of said, oh, but, you know, recruitment, that, well, actually, this is, I'm in front of my prospects. I'm engaging with my clients and engaging with my candidates because that's the other thing with treasury. You go meet a treasury manager and you say, oh, here's my CV, resume. Or they say, oh, actually, I'm recruiting, Mike. Can you help us? It's like, yeah, we'd love to. So that's the nice thing about my industry, that a client is a candidate is a client.
Yes, so. Absolutely. This is phenomenal, Mike. You've got this whole roadshow going on here. And, you know, you mentioned face-to-face. I grew up, and I'm sure you did too, in recruiting where, you know, you always went to see your customer. You do a client visit, right? We actually had a target. We were targeted for 2 client visits per week. So you had to do 8 a month. And my goal was always 3. So I wanted to see 12 clients a month. But when you're doing an event like that, you're doing 65 client visits in one day, right? You're getting FaceTime with all of those people at once. And it really accelerates the relationship versus just on a phone or what have you. So that's phenomenal. And what I'd love about this is that, because some people listen, we're going, wow, you've got the, you know, treasurer from Louis Vuitton, the treasurer from NASDAQ. What, you know, I wouldn't be able to have access to that type of speaker, which, okay, maybe that's a limiting belief. Maybe there's some truth to that, but it's the combination of all the things you're doing that give you that credibility and that access to those top people. And then it just is a virtuous cycle, right? The podcast gives you access to top people, which then means that, you know, you can invite them to be a panelist when you do this event. And, you know, it's just snowballing. I'm really impressed with what you've put together here, Mike. Anything else about... Oh, sorry, you wanted to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, and just going back to something you said earlier about it being free and free events and things like that. And it's not all charitable giving back, because the fact is we want to be in that room with those clients, with those candidates. Now, one of the things that we do is we limit the audience to corporate treasury practitioners or corporate treasury professionals, as we call it in the UK. And people said, oh, no, I'd like to come along. I'm from a bank, a sales, but you know, they go to so many conferences and they get sold to. We're very careful about the audience. And actually, we've done it with the audience in mind. And actually, the nice thing was we were getting the comments back last November. People coming up saying, well, you don't know why some of the associations don't do this. We don't know why. And I said, do you know what? I don't care. And they're like, what do you mean? I said, we're providing this. You are all here, and it shows that you want this, and we're giving you this forum. And I think as a recruiter, there is a temptation, right, how much money can I make out of this? How can I do this? And, you know, because that's the way we should be as recruiters. But the fact is, by providing this, you actually, you know, you serve your community. And the nice payback is, as you say, I'm gonna do 130 client visits in 2 nights in Times Square. Amazing. And then in the same in London, you know, we met 120 candidates, clients, you know, they were a mixture of audience. We're aiming to make it 150, and we're doing two events in the UK. In fact, there's three events now. It's just like, again, people are saying, could you put on another event, please? Yeah, we could do this. But again, it's sharing people's stories, getting the panel together. I've got Dan Ferguson from Resolution Life. I've got Diane Wilson, who's with TI. They're my panelists. And I've got another one. It can be a big guest, actually. We're just trying to make sure the schedule works. One of the top FTSE 100, in fact, probably FTSE 20 treasurers, going to be live on stage. And these guys want to hear their career stories. They don't want to hear me. You know, I'd love to talk to them more, but I'll do that in the drinks afterwards. But if you're showing these guys and giving them, so I'll have a treasury analyst in the audience thinking, right, what steps did they make in their careers? Okay, that's what I'll copy. Right the way through to a treasurer who wants to hear some of the challenges to these treasurers, some of the war stories. How have they got through the, you know, COVID? How have they got through this, you know, inflation crisis? So you can share those. Everyone's getting value, and then they get to mingle with them, and we provide the forum. And it's, if you would do that with that in mind, and again, this chap that you had a while ago, he was doing that much more to get the community and work on that. That, you know, definitely worked.
That was Kyle Winterbottom was the guest. Really interesting, and basically, yeah, they're building community, and in order to generate 100% inbound leads, and it's all retained revenue as well, because you already have the relationship and the credibility. So, Mike, coming full circle here, talking about cash, I think a lot of listeners will go, well, that sounds amazing, but oh my goodness, that would be so expensive to put on that kind of size event, drinks. You know, you've got the venue, you've got the, like, if you're offering any nibbles and drinks, you know, that's going to burn through a huge amount of cash. And yeah, you'll make it back in placements from people you meet at the event. But in terms of cash flow, you're putting out the money before it comes back to you. How have you managed that cash flow issue?
Initially, it was a listener thing called the company credit card. And we're going, crumbs, here we go. This is going to be a bit pricey. What I would say venue-wise, there are people out there that probably want to share your audience with you. So we host it with Herbert Smith, the law firm. They are very giving, you know, we're allowed to use their premises. They come along, they get to meet treasurers. It's a fantastic networking event for them. And they, in exchange for that, they provide us the venue. Fantastic. Okay, pay for the drinks. Well, again, as I say, company credit card to begin with. Then it was actually, we went to one of the banks, went to State Street, and they said, oh, we'll sponsor, you know, because we want to be in the room with those guys. And we stopped other, you know, we said, look, well, you'll be the exclusive sponsors. We also have Kyriba as the tech sponsor now, and they contribute to those costs. And actually, that same for the US. They're now saying, we want to sponsor you. On the backside of that, I got, you know, become much closer with the team at Kyriba. They said, oh, would you like to come and speak at our global live conference? I'm like, yeah. And I looked on the website. Last year was Paris. I thought maybe it's in Netherlands or something. That could be quite nice. Oh, no, it's in Vegas. I'm like, okay, yeah. I could be in a room with 700 treasurers and speak at your conference, and I'm going to do Treasury Career Corner live. I'm going to interview three treasurers live on stage, but they are actually customers of Kyriba, and I'm going to interview them about their treasury careers. That's what I do, and I just love doing it. And then you have as a brand expert, and that's it.
That is amazing, Mike, how you've made the events, I don't know if they're cost neutral, but you've managed the cost of running these events so that essentially you've got free marketing, like a machine that does marketing for you on a huge global scale, puts you directly in front of your ideal clients and candidates. And without a huge cost implication, I think that is probably one of the cleverest things I've heard on the show, Mike. Hats off to you. Amazing.
But the thing is, also, when I've spoken to the sponsors, you know, we came up with some of the pricing, they were like, well, what price are you going to charge us? And it wasn't like, you know, we've been to other conferences where there are very, very pricey. You know, we go some international conferences and you stand at a 2x3 meter space and it's a 5-figure sum. And I'm like, wow. And there's no guarantee, you know, people are going past the booth and you're like, this is all interactive. You're actually there helping your community. And yet we weren't charging that much and we didn't do it for the cash. But the great thing is by getting their sponsorship, also they want to share it with their clients who then become your clients, who become your candidates. And it's this lovely triangle that you just sit at the middle of. Got our recruitment business, got a tech business. We all want to talk to the same people. Also, when we're doing the sessions, for instance, in New York, the sponsors won't actually be in the session because we don't have the room. We want to get practitioners in the room and then they can network with them afterwards. But we want to give them, and I said, look, you could be in the room and rob us of four or five spaces. And they went, oh, I said, no, I'd rather have, you know, five or six more treasurers in there. How about that? And they went, oh yeah, get them in, please. You know, it's what we want to do is by doing that, and that's it, you provide that audience.
That is brilliant. And I'm just, I mean, I could talk to you for hours, Mike. I think the other thing I wanted to ask you about, is there anything else in terms of marketing that you guys are doing that's working really well?
I think the salary survey just runs really well. I think Treasure Career Corner, we just love our treasurers. And I think that's it, working your niche. You know, work in your niche, as they call it, and things like that. Just keep on giving back. I think that's one of the key things is, you know, and it sounds very altruistic. Yes, it's nice that we now, it pays for itself. But again, I'm going to be standing there giving back this value. We do the podcast every week. I just love talking to treasurers. It sounds really, yeah, I don't know. I just love doing it. But, yeah.
That's awesome. I feel the same way about recruiters. So I can totally relate to that. It's phenomenal. And I guess, I mean, there's so many other benefits apart from the goodwill by adding value, building community, building those relationships. But then you're also creating a huge amount of content for your website, which is going to fuel your SEO, means you get discovered by more people as well. So, and then, of course, you've got more content you can chop up and share via social media, LinkedIn. So it's that what people don't understand, like, when people say, oh, I don't know what to post about or that kind of thing, what you've got is you have your podcast, which is like creating a consistent flow of long form, high value content, right? And from that, you can turn that into video clips. You can turn that into, you know, LinkedIn posts. You can turn that into blog articles. You can turn that into so many different other assets that mean that you never have to worry about not having enough content because you almost have more content than you could possibly use. And then that brings you more customers. So the whole thing becomes like self-sustaining in a way. Do you see it like that? Or what's your way in terms of leveraging social media, Mike?
Well, exactly that. We post the, you know, you're getting free content every single week, you know, someone else's new story, and then it appeals right the way across. So it'll be a European treasurer someone wants to listen to, or it'll be someone, you know, on the West Coast of the US, or it'll be someone in the UK, or, you know, we're getting their stories. And two different points, actually, I was going to make. The one thing about people have said about treasurers, they're going, who are treasurers? What are these guys? And people are going, I don't really understand treasury. Why have you got this finance recruiter on your podcast? I was at one of the international conferences recently, and someone said, why is treasury so interesting? I said, look, we've got 10 treasurers within arm's length of me, right? And they were like, yeah. I said, each of them does a different job. What? I said, well, they're cash rich. They're debt laden. They want to do this. They're, you know, focusing on these countries. These guys are just, you know, centralized and they all work remotely. And it's each of those people, every one of them has a different story. They've all got the same title, but they've all got different stories to tell. And that's what we do with the podcast. And then we amplify their messages. We give them an outlet for something they haven't had before. And for some of the listeners, I've heard a couple of, you know, exactly as you said, you've encouraged some of your listeners to be podcasters and things. When we started and people going, oh, well, you know, I had a big following. No, we didn't. No, when we, you know, we had the numbers, we were getting 60 downloads on some of the episodes, maybe, you know, 30, 40 downloads. And it was like, and I was like, oh, you know, and I looked at some of the early numbers. I thought, is this worth the investment? Is this now? It is. But before we do that, and if someone's saying to you and some of these guys just say, oh, I only got 10, 15, you know, and I've heard you mention this a bit, right? How much money would you pay to be in front of 10 people listening to you for an hour about your IT service, your recruitment, again, or about your clients. 10 people around a table. Okay, and then it's 15, then it's 20. We now get 400-500 downloads per episode. And we're at 135,000 downloads. And everyone's like, wow, look at big numbers. For me, that's not what's special. Is now it's given me these opportunities where I get invited to Vegas. I get invited to the national conference. But when I get, but it's not me, it's my, I get there, you know, we just got accepted actually last night, I forgot about this, we got accepted to speak at the Texas conference. And just our session got accepted last night. And I'm thinking, great, immediately shared it with my two guests. I've got two great global treasurers, one from Air Liquide, Tamara, and then I've got Fred from Technip, and we're gonna, I'm gonna interview them about their careers. It's not me grandstanding, hey, I'm treasury recruiter, give me your jobs. It's actually me, you know, bringing these, my clients' stories to life. This is why you should be like Fred, be like Tamara. This is the, what the choices they made, sharing their stories. And by doing that, again, it then positions you as the expert.
Hey, Mike, I'm so glad you mentioned about the numbers, because everyone has to start somewhere, right? And, you know, maybe your first episode, you get 10 or 20 or, you know, however many people listening. But if you really think about it, that is, those are highly engaged prospects. Like, which would you rather have? Would you rather have a 1,000 cold prospects who don't know anything about you and don't care? Or would you rather have 20 people who are really paying attention? They're intensely interested in what you do, and they're listening to a full hour of you interviewing someone. You know, that the there's quantity, obviously, is one thing, and quantity is important. But if you think of the quality of those people who are listening, especially the ones who listen every week, you don't need huge numbers of people. You need people who are really, you know, paying attention to what you're doing and are really intensely interested in what you offer, and who feel like they almost know you, even if you've never met them before. That's way more valuable than 10,000 cold prospects, right?
And it's your marketing engine. This is the great thing. And again, people said to me a while ago, why did I do it? And I said, I wanted some random person who didn't know anything about treasury to know what I did. And you know, the greatest example would be, we've recruited for a global multinational company, petrochemicals industry, had to be careful about saying them, but we recruited their global treasurer. But the reason I got that, I got a phone call from a guy in the Midwest of the US, phoned me up late one night. Hi, is that Mr. Treasury Recruitment? I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking cleaning services. What are you? No, I'm the HR lead for this. Okay. I'd like to organize a meeting with our global HR leader, okay, to discuss treasury and maybe doing a big project for us. I was like, okay, we'll see, you know, what happens. Oh, how did you find me? Oh, I found you, I did a search and I found you do a podcast, right? I was like, yeah, yeah, just about treasurers, right? So you know all of them. Yeah, that's who I talked to. Because there, that led to a six-figure project over the course of, which actually was great throughout COVID, because we were still doing all the search work throughout COVID, because they said, well, it's going to take you 3 to 6 months to find the people. I was like, yeah. And they'll be on three months notice, probably 6 months. And they said, in a year's time, the world will have started to recover out of this. People will start to come back. And actually, they were transitioning this person to the Middle East. I'm like, okay. And they went, yeah, here we go. Here's the search agreement. I'm like, right, we're going to survive COVID then. It was just
fantastic.
Because, everyone.
I love it, Mike. Listen, as I said, we could talk all day, and hopefully we'll get a chance to do it again. But this has been really fun. So many golden nuggets. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Amazing. And keep up the, I'll keep on listening to you in my earbuds as I keep swimming. There you go.
All right, Mike. Awesome. Have a great day.